Hello and welcome to College Admissions with Mark and Anna. Each week we talk about different college admissions topics and answer those tough questions you may be dealing with concerning getting into the college of your choice. We know how stressful this process can be, so each episode we try to make it easier to navigate. Now, here are your hosts, Anna Wren and Mark Hoffer.
Hello and welcome to Mark and Anna's College Admissions Podcast. My name is Mark Hoffer and I'm here with my awesome podcast partner,
Anna Wren.
And today we're going to talk about the unexpected, the untalked about, and the blindsiders, the things that aren't often discussed when students head off to college. And after years of working with students and parents, I think we've heard all kinds of interesting stories from students and parents about the college admissions process and basically the transition to college. We hear about some of the things that students tell us that they've learned in college, or more importantly, and I think that's one of the big parts about today's episode, is students will tell us what they wish someone would have told them before they got to college. So I think that's what we're going to discuss today, isn't that right, Anna?
Yes, indeed, Mark. That is exactly what we're going to discuss, because as we know, students have move-in, and and I think there's, you know, even without moving, I feel like that first semester is just craziness and trying to just get your bearings at college. So this is not just, I think, applicable for move-in. It's just for that, even that whole first year.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think even some of the things that we're going to talk about that we've thrown ideas back and forth, it has to do with some of the things that happened before students head off to college, and some of the things that I don't, you know, all the focus is getting to college and getting into college. But I think there are so many of the other ancillary things that are part of this college puzzle that just never get discussed. And I think that's kind of the fun part about today's episode.
Yes, let's dive in, because we have a really awesome long list that we're not going to deep dive into. If any of you all have questions, you can always write Mark and I or post on our Facebook page. But let's go ahead and let's run them down.
Sure. I think, and I told you this earlier, I think what, you know, stemmed this whole idea for this episode was in talking with students and parents as they are headed off to college, which is a very timely thing right now. I had parents who were asking me, you know, is it normal that your teen who's headed off to college is one day very clingy and cuddly, and then the next day they are, you can't do anything right, they don't want to talk to you. And then I'm talking to students, they will say exactly the same thing, like, my parents are acting weird, I don't know what's going on. So I think that's kind of what's, you know, started me thinking about what are the things we don't talk about in this whole process. But it is perfectly normal that your son or daughter heading off to college is becoming both anxious and excited at the same time. Have you noticed that, Anna?
Yes, and I think it's, we often forget about what an emotional process it is too, in terms of adjusting and moving in, for both the student and the parent, actually. And so that can often result in the behavior you had talked about, in terms of being very clingy one moment to being maybe dismissive the next.
And it's perfectly normal. I think that's the one thing that throws people for a loop. They think, everybody thinks they're so unique that it only happens to them. But finding out that, no, this is not only normal, it's expected.
Yes, it's expected. And, you know, I think it's, like I said, it's like the first, well, for many kids, it'll be the first time they're living away from home, especially, right?
Yeah, especially if they're a single child, you know, that throws a whole bunch of things into the can.
Yes, I think that raises the stakes even more. And I think it's also harder in terms of if you are the first or the last, for the same reasons, because, you know, it's the baby, right? You're the baby and you're moving off. And so for a lot of parents, they hold on a little tighter. And I think Mark and I would agree when we say, please let your parents hold you a little tighter at move in.
That's right. Remember, if they're helping you pay for college, put up with it just a little bit. A little clingy is okay.
Yes, yes. Along those lines, what else should students expect, or parents?
Well, I think some of them have to do with the moving process on its own. And like you say, you know, if this is the first time they're going out to live on their own, they don't know, you know, what should they take? What should they pack? What should they leave behind? And some of those things. What are some of the things that students have told you that either they wish they wouldn't have taken or that they wish they would have packed along the way?
I know. I think it depends on where the students come from. So I think, for example, clothes, you don't have to bring your entire wardrobe to college. You can actually buy stuff there, especially if you are not used to the climate. So that's one thing I would recommend. I know, like, I've known kids that come from, like, California and Hawaii, for example, and they definitely don't own any winter gear when they come to the East Coast. So that's always quite interesting. And I remember, at least where I went to school, there was a club that would actually take the students on a winter gear buying trip and help them buy the necessities to survive the winter at college. But you'll say, like, sometimes you'll overpack and you can tell me, but I always say, like, don't overbuy, right? Because where will you put your stuff over break? And a student and I were talking about that because they're going to the South for college, and we're up in the Northeast. And I was like, well, and she wanted to bring, I think, a refrigerator, which I think is pretty common these days, actually.
Yep.
And she's like, but the problem is we don't know where to store it. And I was like, well, most schools have storage. And she's like, yeah, but we heard that it gets so humid that mold just grows in everything. So similarly, have a plan. So for example, her plan is that her roommate is from that state, so maybe they can take the fridge home over the break. So similarly, don't overbuy and figure out what you're going to do with your stuff. But what have you gotten from your kids?
Well, the clothes issue is one that's always fun for me because I work with some students from African Leadership Academy in Johannesburg, South Africa. And I remember one of the first students that I worked with, he went back to UNC Chapel Hill. And one of the first notes I got from him was, oh, Mr. Mark, it is very cold here. I now own very good gloves and a very good jacket. I thought, oh, yeah. And then he talked about what it was like to see snow for the first time. So that was very new to me. One of the things that I often, just because I'm a cyclist, and I think for many reasons it's a good thing for students to have at their disposal for when they get to college, I talk to students who either take a bike or they buy one when they get on campus. One of the things that students should know about, there's a service called shipbike.com, and basically for about $60 you put your bike in a box and you can ship it to the college. You just have to make sure that you're shipping it to a place that can receive that size of a box, but that's an easy and inexpensive way to get your bike to school, and that bike can serve you in so many ways, so you don't have to take Uber, Lyft, public transportation, and not have to walk everywhere you go.
Yes, and Mark and I can attest to this. When we were traveling in California, we saw so many people biking because it's so warm out there. So it's great. It's a nice option, especially if you have to get across a very large campus with very little time.
And a caveat to that one is, conversely, if you are in an area that has a lot of snow and you take a bike, you have to remember, and you haven't ridden in the snow, which is really dangerous, that you are going to have to plan accordingly to open up your schedule and time to get to class.
That is a great point. I hadn't thought about that.
And a helmet.
Oh, yes. Please remember your helmets. Be safe.
Don't forget the helmet.
Yes. So speaking of transportation, I think a lot of people, I remember a dad asked me once, like, how much money should I give my child a month?
Yep, the allowance.
Yeah, as an allowance for using stuff. And I'm like trying to think about, well, what are they going to spend it on? And that really varies based on where you'll be and what you'll have access to and what your food dining hall plan looks like. So I think, you know, kind of talking through that with your child for the parents out there is important.
Absolutely. I think this is one of those major undiscussed conversations and subjects that parents and students can benefit from having way before. We're talking as junior so that they understand what's coming. And those are the things like finances, about allowance and how much money is expected to be spent or put on a card, as it were. So, you know, if the student thinks a $400 per month Uber bill is perfectly normal, a parent may have a very different perspective on $400 Uber bill than what is acceptable. So I think those are the kind of things that really should be discussed. I think food is the other one.
Yes.
That is
Starbucks. What is that Starbucks budget?
Yeah. Yes, the caffeine budget in many forms.
And on that line, I would say for people that have seniors that are graduating, a lot, obviously, I think friends and family will always want to offer gifts for graduation. A very helpful tip in that regard is to have them buy gift cards. So whether it is for Starbucks or for like where kids like to dine, like Chipotle. I don't know where else kids like to dine these days, but that might be a very good option.
On that same note, I hadn't thought about the gift cards, but it's funny. I was talking to a student who was just moving in, and they said, I wish I had a Target credit card that was specifically for Target. And I said, why? And they said, well, because most of the things that I bought this week are directly from Target. And I said, well, maybe that's something you can ask for Christmas. And they mentioned, you know, a Target gift card. So I think that's genius.
Yes. If you do have the Target credit card, I don't know if they'll allow younger kids to have access to that, but you save 5% at Target every time you shop. No advertising for Target, but I just know because we have a Target credit card because Target is down the road from us. So that might be a good option if that's what is near your child.
Exactly. So we mentioned food, which you and I both love to talk about. We might as well talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the cafeteria, which is the food card or the food program, and some of the ways that students are blindsided by what their point system or their swipe system or however their meal plan works. What are some of the stories that you've heard from students that we can pass on to this next upcoming class?
I think for mine, I don't know if it's that my students often are not at cafeterias that they enjoy as much. But oftentimes they tell me that they wish they hadn't bought such a large meal plan at the cafeteria because they might not like dining there as frequently. And so a lot of them prefer block plans, which is like you get how many ever swipes per semester. So I would say like, do not do the a la, the carte blanche where you can go as often as you like, because your kid will get tired and you don't necessarily want to be spending $10 for your kid to go get cereal at the cafeteria. You can give them money and let them buy cereal and do that, from the comfort of their dorm. So that's the most common one I hear. But obviously you do want to, I'm going to mention a little later on, but like for the cafeteria, I don't know if your kids talk about it, but, find out when the special food days are, because that's when you'll find more kids in the caf. So for us, it was like Chicken Finger Thursdays or there was Taco Tuesdays. But figure out when those special foods are.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I've learned here in the last 5 years, when I tour campuses, especially cafeterias, which I always do, in search of grilled cheese sandwich, I find that the cafeterias across the country, they're all trying to one-up each other in a lot of cases, where the food court, no longer just a cafeteria, but a food court, is one of the ways that they try to entice students to pick them. And they become pretty elaborate and pretty expensive. And so they're very different from college to college. And I think as students start identifying the colleges that they are looking to attend, make sure that part of their review includes not only the meal plan, but what kind of food's available and when. And one of the things that I hear from students is they wish they would have researched the meal plan or the swipe system or however the cafeteria is run. They wish that they would have researched that a little bit more fully before they actually committed to a particular program if there were options available. And for both the reasons of, like you say, they may not like the food and they may have too much money on their meal card, or they find out really how expensive each swipe is. And
yes.
You know, there's three more weeks left in the term and they're having to try to figure out, okay, who's got the best nachos for nothing.
Yes. And also see if you can, if you have guest swipes.
Ah, right.
So, because sometimes you might have visitors and that's also a great way to get rid of them if you have too many. Not every school let you do that, or every capsule or plan will let you do that. But that's another option as well.
I hadn't thought of making friends with those people who don't eat very much, but that's a great idea. Identify those people early and that way you can make sure that good friends are near and dear.
And similarly, find out where, because there's usually more than one cafeteria, especially at the larger schools. So figure out which cafeteria is known for what.
Agreed.
Is the other thing with food. So, Mark and I could talk about food all day. But let's get back to academics, right? Because that's what they're there for.
Agreed. Mark. They're there to study. So one of the things that came up when we were targeting ideas was the reality, the necessity, and the need to make sure you identify where to study. Since you are there for academics first, it's a good idea to find what works for you. And you and I have a slightly different ways to finding that spot where you can study. What do you recommend to students when they head to school? When and where and how should they find their study place?
I honestly say test them out. So sometimes you'll find study areas in the actual dorms. You'll obviously find it in the library, but even the library, I feel like many colleges that have multi-floor libraries will have different levels of noise acceptance. And depending on how you learn best, you might want to figure out which floor, I guess, might be the best fit for you. But I would say test. Like sometimes it might even be a coffee shop. But how do you test it out?
Well, one of the things that I tell students, the first thing when they arrive on campus is do a library tour. I'm a fan of establishing a consistent environment that is the same so that they pattern. As a psychologist, I look at it and say, if you set up the behavior and the habit of sitting down and making that spot associated with studying and only studying, if you find the right spot, that can honestly be the way that you actually study effectively and efficiently over 4 years. And I know a lot of people, including myself, who identified a target seat and spot where at the same time, pretty much every day, people knew where they could find me and I was always going to be there. And the other part of that is if I ever felt sleepy, I would never fall asleep in that spot. I would get up and leave, so I didn't associate it with being sleepy. But much like you, I really believe you have to find that spot that works for you, and that may take a couple of iterations of different libraries and different seats. Make sure it's next to a bathroom, though.
Yes, I hadn't even thought about that part, being next to a bathroom, but it does make sense. And I would say, for me, try not to pick the spots next to the elevator, because that constant digging or whatever in the traffic, that can be pretty distracting.
Yep. The one thing that I also tell students is earplugs are better than earbuds, and for many, many reasons. There are so many studies that show your mind really can't basically attend to two things at the same time. And if you actually have earphones and music or even somebody talking, your brain is using part of its power and part of its hard drive to attend to that noise. So anything you can do to limit that and bring focus to your studying is going to work to your advantage. And earplugs are a great way of keeping some of that at bay and your hard drive focused on what you need to study.
Yes, great point. Speaking of studying, something I like to tell students to make sure they do, preferably the first week they get there after new student orientation, is to figure out where are your resources? Yes. Where is the tutoring center? Do they have a writing center? Get familiar with it and feel comfortable going in those places, because chances are you will need to leverage it at some point.
Agreed. And that's one of the things. I think one of the things that came out when we were discussing ideas was the idea of finding your resources early, as soon as you're on campus, probably even before school starts, because then you're going to be too busy to work on this and things come up. So find the things so you know where they are, you know the way to get there, you know what hours they're open, and that way when something comes up and you need to use those resources, you know where they are and you know the hours and you know how to get there. It isn't something that you have to attend to after the fact. So what are some of the things that you tell students that they should find as soon as they're on campus, other than a library, that
and
are
the tutoring center?
Yeah.
I think you mentioned it, but like health services.
Yep.
I think that's the other important thing to find. Just because you never know when you'll get sick or how to, I think, get a hold of any emergency services should you need it.
Agreed. The two emergencies, I mean, are personal emergencies and health emergencies. And I tell students that, you know, two of the things that they definitely need to identify, and this is both for on-campus and off-campus, depending on the hours, depending on the severity, depending on the emergency, whatever. But I have them research the urgent care for on-campus and off-campus, where's the closest hospital, find out their, and basically put that information in their phone so they have the number and the address. And then also for on-campus and off-campus police. Those are things that, you know, when you need them quickly. So it's best, especially with the phones we have now, you can have that immediately at your fingertips, but just put it into there so you know where it is and how easily to find it.
That's a great point. And also security. I hadn't thought about that until I was talking with you, but yeah.
Yeah, the security one, more and more campuses, as we tour, we find that they have those basically a safety spot where it may be a pole with a light on it or some version of that, and it has a phone on it or a direct line to somebody. And basically it's a safety spot where either somebody can come get you immediately. They know where that spot is. Hopefully you never have to use one, but if you know where they are, that means it's a resource that you can use.
Yes. Yes. Who else should they talk to on campus or get used to talking to?
Well, you know, because we're consultants, we ask that students know where their advisors are, both academic and probably a professional advisor if they have one that is long-term looking on how they're setting themselves up for a job. Introduce yourself and know where they are, and so that they know who you are when you're a freshman, as opposed to only going in when you're a senior. So, and use those services as well.
Yes. Yes. And also similarly, so that's obviously advising is great, but not advising comes from like professionals. So I was going to say, like, it's also on my list to get to know your RA as well, especially if you're a freshman, because you'd be surprised. They can advise you on anything from like academics related, like which professors are good or which are the best classes, like must have classes to take before you graduate, to, you know, where to get great food or pick up certain things that you might need. So, you know, I think that's another useful resource for you.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned this for using the RA and their wisdom. There again, food. You should ask everybody on campus. We made it back to food again. So, and speaking of food, I think it's important to know where The best restaurant is close to campus. So when your parents show up for a visit, that you can go to a fine dining institution.
That is a great point. And why should they know about where the fine dining is, Mark?
Because their parents are going to pay for it, and this may be the best meal they have in quite a while.
That's a great point, yes. And also, like, you know, mom and dad rarely get to see you, so, and they probably wouldn't want to eat at the cafe or grab Subway with you. So, you know, exactly. That's another great point as well.
Well, and associated with that is also know where you can get very nice, inexpensive flowers. So when people show up or for whatever need, flowers can, you know, open lots of doors and lots of hearts.
Oh, that's so sweet. And similarly, I would say ice cream. It can cheer up a lot of, it can cheer spirits, because inevitably you will find times when it gets really tough and someone around you might need a lift.
Agreed. So let's talk about one of the issues that I think we may have a little bit of a discrepancy between the way you view them and I view them.
Okay.
We may come to a consensus, but the pursuit and when and where and how many of clubs.
Okay. So my thing is, like, I don't know, at least when you get to campus, usually there's a fair or there's a special day where all the clubs are displayed. And so my thing is try to go to as many tables as you can so you can learn more about them and sign up for the ones that interest you. Now, the challenge of this is that it might be over 10, it might be over 20, but I would say try to make it to the meeting so that way you at least learn about it, more so for the clubs that are new for you that you haven't tried out before. And then also because you don't know, I would like to hope that all clubs run on campuses, but that's just not the truth.
Oh, right.
So that's why sometimes more is better, although I definitely don't feel that way necessarily when it comes to other parts of the process. But that way you can figure out which clubs actually run, which ones are you actually interested in continuing with for the semester or the year.
Okay. So one of my questions for you then is, how many do you recommend, how many clubs or groups do you recommend a freshman actually participate in on a regular basis? So how many should they be involved in and why?
That's a really good question. I would say as a freshman, it's hard because in some ways you want to get involved in everything, but you have to balance academics along with it. Honestly, I would test out like maybe 3 to 5. You might think that's a little much, Mark. But I think it's because, like, in my experience, certain clubs are cyclical. They don't run all the time or have, like, really a lot of things going on necessarily all the time. So you might find yourself doing, I guess, being able to cram that in, if that makes sense. So you know, when I was in college, it was very much, I think I would be involved in over 10 clubs. And I think it was because it was cyclical. Because this one would quiet down and then I need something else to do, or certain ones are in the background, but also because I just wanted to get out there and meet a lot of different people. I came from a really small town, like literally 1 square mile. So for me, it was about trying to get out there and meet people. And I feel like at the same time, even for clubs I hadn't planned on joining, it was really cool that other friends would drag me to like events going on. And I think being open-minded and trying new things is part of experience in college.
Got it. Well, and the thing is, I totally want to agree with you 100%.
It's okay if you don't, Mark.
No, I do. The social butterfly in me wants to say, absolutely, get out there, meet people, join groups, do things that you haven't actually had the opportunity to do. You know, if you've never been skiing, join the ski club, go try that. But also, I have to say that I have to temper that, because when I talk with sophomores, I ask them, okay, reflecting on your freshman performance and your freshman year, what are the primary things that you would do differently? And I'd say 80% of the students that I ask that to, they will say they wish they hadn't overcommitted socially, and socially meaning clubs or other things that took away from or took the place of time that they needed to attend to studies. A lot of them say, now I am faced with this GPA that I have to dig out from underneath because I know I want to go to graduate school, or I know it's going to open opportunities for me later. So now I have this. So please tell future students that they should select their groups and activities very selectively, and also do that weighing the reality of their academic course load and knowing that, you know, why are they there at college? Yes, it is to meet some people, but is it academically focused, and is that their priority? So I agree with you. I want, you know, school should be about meeting people and trying new things, but also being able to learn that balance. Hopefully it's not a painful process in that first year.
No, that's a great point you bring up, Mark. And I wholeheartedly agree with you on it in terms of overcommitting, which is why, like, I've had students ask me, like, oh, they're so eager, they want to get a job their first semester. And I'm like, don't. Just because you need at least a good semester's time to adjust to everything. So even though I think I encourage students to attend meetings, I don't necessarily expect you to fully commit to that many clubs. I think you have to figure out what your workload's going to be and then go from there and see what's realistic. And also feel like, and don't, I know, what is the term these days, Mark? FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Yep. What I would say to that is you've got 8 semesters. You can try the club later on down the line, right?
Exactly.
So don't worry if you can't do it, you know, right then and there, or get super involved in something. But yes, do be conscious of your time and know that certain activities, like a theatrical production, will suck much more time than certain other clubs.
Exactly. The club itself is going to have a time requirement or obligation, and knowing that, you know, one club is much different from another. And like you say, some are cyclic. So you may, you know, actually look at those opportunities as a yearly calendar and what kind of opportunities you want to have. Also faced with your academic calendar and finals and midterms as well.
Yes. And I think from there, I would dovetail to say, like, you know, be prepared to understand, just like, you know, your schedule might change, so might your major. And I've gotten many a panicked parent or student who's like, oh my gosh, I just don't know. And I think I want to do this now. And it's okay. It's totally fine. It's fine to know that they are going to change, especially as if they have to fill in, complete like a liberal arts core or some kind of core requirement where they have to try different classes than they're used to. It may change, and that's okay.
I totally agree. That's one of the things that this is one of those conversations. And you made a comment about this, earlier today. You were talking about, parents and students should have a conversation before they go to college about the reality and the high probability that they may change their major. And what does that mean? What are the ramifications? How are we going to, you know, experience that decision together? And are we on the same page of what it means? And I think having that discussion beforehand, even though, you know, a student may say, I'm absolutely not changing from engineering or pre-med. Well, you know, I work with a lot of STEM students.
Yes.
And I cannot tell you how common it is that engineering gets real hard and people, you know, aren't always so thrilled about the math level, and they often look at other majors. Same thing with pre-med. You know, you find out that chemistry class really hurts and I hate chemistry and I'm not going to do it. So that's one of the things I think having that conversation before you even head to college is a good one to have.
Yes. And in addition to being open-minded about, you know, academics, also be open-minded that you will meet people from a variety of backgrounds and experiences. And just because it's not yours doesn't mean it's better. It's just different. I think that was a big thing when I got to college, or and for other students to experience as well, depending on where you come from.
I agree. A matter of fact, I stole a friend's quote and I put it in our notes, and I think you saw it. It's what's important to you is important to you. However, it may not be important to everyone else. That's one of those things. When you get in the classroom and when you get on campus and you're having a conversation, you may find out that you know, you may be out of your normal bubble all of a sudden in college, and people are expressing ideas and having perspectives that are very different from your own, and that's okay.
It absolutely is, and I think you grow a lot. Like I know a lot of stories where students have really grown a lot, depending on where they come from and where they end up going. So being open-minded is going to be good for you. Mm-hmm. I wanted to touch on scheduling a little bit, because we talk about like time management. And so something I said before was like, don't work. Don't plan on working or interning your first semester.
Yeah.
But also like try to block your time. I think people tend to be more productive that way. But also should you later on decide you want to work, then you might want to only do classes Monday through Thursday, or maybe just do Monday and Wednesday or whatever it is. But that was something I didn't know as a freshman, and I think most kids don't know. They just take whichever classes. But when your classes only meet typically twice a week, you have the ability to structure your time differently depending on what your needs are. And also the other caveat with that, I think, is also knowing that you have time to take advantage of office hours for your professors as well.
I agree. And matter of fact, when we're talking about professor hours, one of the things I really encourage students, all students, even graduate students, to do once they arrive, introduce themselves to their professors. Even if you are at a huge university, go in, learn the art of communication and building a relationship, because you never know who this person might be able to introduce you to, or an opportunity that they might be able to show you, or a door they might be able to open. But if they don't know you and they don't know what you're about and you've never introduced yourself, that opportunity goes away. So I really encourage students, before classes start, even go in and see if a door is open, go in and introduce yourself to your professor. Let them know where you're from. Let them know what you're excited about. And then, you know, that's all the introduction you need. But it sure does make office hours, when you show up with an issue or a problem or a question, so much easier, because you've already established that relationship.
Yes, and I'll share a personal anecdote that relates to something you said also. Is I had to go to office hours once because I made a rookie mistake and I forgot to show up for class. What is that rookie mistake, Mark?
Well, the rookie mistake is signing up for a 7 a.m. class. Anyone who does that doesn't realize what college real studying to the wee hours of the morning sometimes that needs to happen, because 7 o'clock comes real early.
Yes. And for me, it was 8 a.m. So don't even like try before 9 a.m., I would say. It just, something happens between high school and college, and it's just, it might not happen that you wake up for those classes on time. So don't do it to yourself. Or also figure out, hopefully by now you have figured out at what hours you work best.
Yep.
And see also if you can time your classes that way, because I know for certain classes, they also have evening classes or afternoon classes.
Agreed. Well, and one thing I think it's really important that students are very honest with themselves about what their needs are and how they function best, because some students are going to say, well, I'm just going to stay up until 1 o'clock at night every night and I'm going to study. Well, that may work for a week, and then you find yourself falling off the wagon, as it were. And that is not good. So what you want to do is set up those habits and behaviors that you can maintain and be realistic. And that's one thing that I think a lot of students, they think, I'm just going to go to the library, I'm going to study for 6 hours every night. Well, that's really not effective. And it shows in research that, you know, blocking your study is much more effective and efficient. So like you said, you should block your time as well, especially for studying and for working or whatever you need to do socially. You need to be able to be a schedule master.
Yes. Planners are great for that, by the way. The other thing I would say is, like, at least when I got to college, I always thought everyone was perfect. And I know for a lot of my students that are attending certain institutions, they get kind of psyched out when they meet their peers. And I would just like to offer that no one's perfect. No one is zipping through, you know, calculus two, you know, not everyone is doing that. So, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help, whether it be from tutors, your professors, or your peers, because I think you'll find, unlike some of the high school days where everyone's very competitive and they don't share, I often find that in college, students are more than happy to share and help.
I totally agree. It's one of those, imposter syndrome is so common, especially in really talented and effective students who have incredible potential. And working with students who are heading to, you know, really ultra low acceptance rate schools with great reputations. And when I have a conversation with them, they have a total package. They are ready to go. And when I talk with them, I'll say, well, how do you feel about it? I don't know how I got in. I'm going to fail. I don't even know how I can even compete with some of these people. And I have to talk them off the ledge before they even get there. And they haven't even met their other students. So one of the things that I really encourage students to do, is when they get on campus, have those conversations that allow them to realize they belong there. And a lot of students, you know, when I talk to them when they're juniors, they go, all those people that I thought were going to be, you know, heads and shoulders above anything I could possibly do, it turned out that they're just regular people. They're very bright and we work effectively together. So I think that's one thing students really have to recognize. They're there for a reason, and trust the college for having the insight to bring them onto campus.
Let's talk some fun stuff now though, Mark, right? Mm. We've been talking about like academics and stuff. Let's turn it back and we'll end on fun notes. And one of them is that we recognize you're going to party. Most likely you will.
Yes.
Your parents know that, we know that. And I think the one thing I tell my students is please only drink cups you pour yourself. And yep. Travel in packs or herds, because we want you to stay safe.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that students have to realize. They're traveling to a new environment. They have to identify the environment and the safety. And one of the things that they really need to do is become more responsible and have their, you know, get some street smarts. And some of that can just be aware of your surrounding and aware of your environment. I actually tell all students to know where not only are there places that they can go that are definitely more safe than others on campus, but to know where those are and know how they can travel to and from the places that they normally go in the safest route.
Mm, that's a really great point. And also ask people. Because if you're a newbie, you might not know that the alley to get from the classes to your dorms is not the best way to go.
Agreed. Even if and I tell all students they should have a whistle. I know that sounds weird, but I tell them to have a whistle on their backpack. And basically, if the worst possible scenario happens, they've at least got a way to make a signal that somebody's going to hear.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I had a parent ask me, like, you know, do I buy mace for her? And I said, is it legal wherever you're going? Yep. So that's the other thing to kind of keep in mind is, I know, especially for families that have daughters, they worry a bit more. Yep. Also, depending on which college they're going to, they might worry a little more. So I would say, like, if you are considering mace or any other devices, just make sure it's legal before you get your child these devices.
Exactly. They should. And that's one of the reasons why to visit your on-campus and off-campus police and find out what the regulations are for where you are. Find out if mace or a stun device is legal for you to carry and at what age carry it, because that may change at 21. And so knowing that those things are or are not legal is the first step. And then you have to have the conversation with yourself and your parents and find out, is this something that you're willing to carry on your person?
Yes. And now let's end with one fun thing. What is one final tip that you have that's also fun, hopefully?
Oh my gosh, the fun thing. Well, should it be a food one? That's one that would be too easy. I think there again, look at the things on campus that allow you a little bit of joy. This is a new environment with new stressors. Identify those things that you can do for fun that are, you know, open pretty much all day or all evening, things that you can do that make you feel relaxed. I actually, you know, there again, I look for food. So I'm going to go back to the gelato or ice cream. If it's something that you can take a long leisurely walk to and get your head clear, have some ice cream, have it with a friend. If you want to bring a friend along, it can be a great social time. Those little things can mean the difference between getting overstretched and anxious about the whole college thing or being really successful because you know where to find that balance point.
That's a great one. I was going to end with food too. And and this is, I have a bad habit, and I think this developed in college actually, and I sadly have not shaken this habit, is I eat at night, late in the night. So if you plan on studying late, and you get hungry, figure out what is your plan for food once the cafeteria is closed. Is it a delivery service? Is it, Mark and I talk about ramen? Is it mac and cheese? Or, you know, is there a place that actually delivers at 4 a.m.? But figure out, like, what, you know, if you are going to be snacking and hungry, and see if you can try to make good food choices if possible, because that freshman 15 is so real.
It's so real.
Right?
The freshman 25 is so real. It's,
I know. So just keep all of that in mind. I guess in mentioning that, also another place to try to figure out is where is the gym when you get there?
Oh, yes.
Forgot about that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the things that should be on your preschool tour and make sure you know how to get there and the hours of operation.
Yes, yes. I know I was psyched out to get to the gym, like, because I didn't know where it was. So if you include it on your places the first week, or if you feel like silly going by yourself, bring a gym buddy. You know, it's a great way to make friends. But yeah, I think we've got an awesome list, right, Mark?
I think these are lots of things that students can do when before they arrive on campus and when they immediately arrive to help them be more successful over the course of their first year, especially.
Well, on that note, happy first semester, guys.
Exactly. Successful first semester as well.
Thanks for listening to College Admissions with Mark and Anna, where we make getting into college easy and fun. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and subscribe to get updated each time we release a new episode. Also, for more helpful college admissions information, visit our website at www.collegeadmissionspodcast.com.